Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. This is episode number 74, and what we're going to talk about today is bringing things home. I'm going to look at nine different areas of our life that we need to return to the home that has been somehow taken away or given to other people or, you know, in some ways has distanced itself from the home, and we need to bring it back. And so I'm going to look at those nine areas. Hopefully it should be a good show for you. But before we do that, I want to bring out a few announcements and take care of some business. First of all, shortly here, you will be seeing or hearing another intro and exit music on the Legacy Podcast. My oldest son, Graham, has been working on developing a song. So he has finished writing it. Now he's working on preparing it and developing it so that it can be presentable as the theme music for the Legacy Podcast. So be tuned up for that. That should be coming soon. Looking forward to it. Also, make sure that you are following us on all the various social media, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, that kind of thing. And then most importantly, though, I would encourage you to register as a user of the Legacy Podcast. That enables you to get email updates as to when we have a new podcast coming out or anything changes on the website. You will be notified through email. And that helps you to be able to maximize your time so you're not checking back regularly, although I encourage you to do that. But this way you can find out when a new show comes on through email. So registered, you can do that on the right top corner of the website. And our affiliates also, I encourage you to go to those and frequent their business. And the focus for today is 48 Days. That's Dan Miller's organization. And Dan Miller is an expert at helping people achieve the kind of work that they want. And he does that both if you want to be self-employed and create your own business, or if you want to go and be an employee of somebody else. He has all kinds of resources available at his store that can help you with that. And they were instrumental in helping me start my businesses years ago. And so 48 Days, he's got one out there, 48 Days to the Work You Love. He's also got one, 48 Days to Creative Income, which is more on the business end. And then he's got one called No More Mondays. Those are the three books in particular that I would recommend to you, but all of his resources are available. So check them out, 48 Days. And then also, I want you to make sure that if you have feedback, that you give that to me at steve@thelegacypodcast.com. You can also, of course, provide feedback to each of the episodes under the comments or notes section. But if you have a particular thing that you want me to know about, maybe you have somebody you want me to interview, or you have a comment or a question or something like that, best way to do that is steve@thelegacypodcast.com. And then finally, I want to encourage you, if you like the show, to become a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year, and with that, you have access to our exclusive members page that has downloadable resources as well as discounts to various vendors, has some gardening things in there. It's got some money and finances issues or articles in there, as well as information that is beneficial to you. Check that out on the website and consider becoming a Legacy Partner. If you do that, you can help support the show at less than 25 cents an episode, so I encourage you to do that. That takes care of the business for today. So now let's go ahead and talk about nine areas that we need to bring back home. And before I actually look at those nine areas, I want to kind of paint a picture for you of what the typical American family is, especially the typical American suburban family, and what our society has created with that. And if you take, most families like this, the husband and wife both work outside the home. They, you know, maybe leave the home at 7:30, take the kids off to school, and they go on to work. And, you know, they usually have lunch with a coworker or something. And then they, the kids are at school most of the day. They're at work most of the day. And then they usually get dinner maybe on takeout, or, you know, they get pizza on the way home, or, you know, something like that. Especially if they've got kids' activities in the evening, maybe soccer practice or basketball or whatever it might be. They, you know, pick up the kids from school and they grab a bite to eat somewhere out, and they go to the basketball or baseball or whatever sports event or ballet or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, they finally get home maybe 7, 8 o'clock at night after having left at 7:30 in the morning. And so, you know, they typically in our society, we spend a lot of money buying homes, and yet very few people actually do anything with their homes other than sleep and shower. And so we spend all these resources on something we never use.
So my encouragement is to use the resources of the home. Let's bring things back to the home. And what are those things that we should bring back to the home? Well, first of all, let's talk about bringing work back to our home. You know, see, we live in a society right now where all we seem to do is leave the home to go to work. If you talk to somebody who wants a job, what do they say? They say that they need to go find a job. They need to go to work to find a job. And so they go off into the workplace, working to be an employee or something like that. And they, you know, so they're leaving the home to do that. And, you know, both spouses tend to do this. And, you know, the best thing that can happen is if they develop some kind of means where they can both work from home. But I know that's difficult. But at least, at the very least, let's try to work at bringing wives home so that they would not have to be working outside the home. Now, I'm not saying that every woman needs to work only from the home. But there are a lot of women out there who are working outside the home that would love to be at home and working in the home. And so, you know, this actually has peaked. In the year 2000, 77% of women between age 25 and 55 were in the workforce. That's an astronomical figure. That never was the case prior to that. It slowly grew, especially through the 70s and 80s and 90s, and until we got to year 2000. Now it seems to be on a little bit slower trend downward, in fact. But I can put a link in the show notes to that article. But it's an incredible statistic showing how many people, that would leave less than 25% of the population actually has the ideal home where, you know, the traditional home of a, you know, one income father, husband, and the wife stays home and works, you know, as a homemaker in the home and raising children, that kind of thing. That's less than 25% of the population has that now as part of their lifestyle. And so my encouragement would be, let's try to change that. Let's try to bring home the work. Now, this might mean that, you know, there is a, well, let me back up for a moment. First of all, you know, there's a lot of people that say, well, that's, you know, that's a great accomplishment for women that they can now work in the workforce and get equal pay as men and that kind of thing. And, you know, I'm probably going to make some people upset by what I'm saying here, but I think that is actually a sad state of our economy and our sad state of our nation where, in many cases, there has to be two incomes to support a household. And it used to be back in the 50s and earlier where a man could work at a, you know, a basic blue-collar job and support his family with, you know, a pretty decent standard of living just through his income. And now it seems as though two incomes aren't quite enough. And, of course, that is partly a result of the devaluing of our money and the sending of our production overseas, and as a result of that becoming a consumer society rather than a production society, and as a result of that our wealth has left us as a nation and our standard of living has continued to go down. But the trend maybe has peaked, and the hope that we have is that now people are beginning to see the great disadvantage to our society and to our culture and to our families by having both families leave the home and go to work. How much better is it if we could have people working out of the home? And it'd be best, of course, if we could have both working out of the home. And the best way to do that, of course, is by starting a family business or having a work-at-home type business where at least the home is the hub from which the family leaves and participates together. And, you know, there's a lot of ways you can do that. Of course, 48 Days, the affiliate for today, has all kinds of resources on how you can develop a family business and look at the strengths and the weaknesses of the family and come up with some kind of thing that you can do for that. And so I encourage you to get from that. But there's also, so there's really two ways you can look at it. First of all, you can talk with your employer that you currently have and see if there's more opportunity for you to work from home. I know that there are a lot of businesses who are trying to encourage people to work from home, especially if you're involved with anything computers and can do stuff with the internet and emails and all the kinds of telecommunications available today. There's no reason why people need to go into a cubicle and work anymore. And so maybe you can negotiate with your boss and take a little bit less pay if you can work from home, and that will allow you a little bit more flexibility. You wouldn't have to travel so far away, and you can have your hub in your home. And so that's one alternative. The other alternative, of course, is what I've already mentioned. That is starting a business where you can actually work from your home or at least work out of your home. So the first thing we need to bring home is our work. Second thing is we need to bring home our education. You know, we fall into this thinking in our society that we need to pay professionals to do things that God has ordained us to do. And education is one of those things. It seems as though in our culture we've gotten this idea that we have to pay somebody $40,000, $50,000 a year and combine all the kids together in a class of 30 or 40 kids, 20 kids, whatever it might be, and think that that is going to be a better situation for our kids and our learning environment for our kids than actually having them trained in the home and teaching them in the home. Parents have the same skills and the same ability, better, in fact, to know their child and to educate their child. And so let's bring our education home. Home education used to be a real foreign thing. It was actually illegal in many places. I remember hearing from a family who was very, they were like on the frontier of homeschooling in Virginia, which is where I live, and their names are the Boyers. And the Boyers, I remember hearing the story about how when the officials would come by to, see what was going on in their homes, they would have all their kids go and hide under beds and in bathrooms and things like that, and not to make any kind of noise or come out until, you know, the all clear sign was mentioned, because they were actually going against the laws of the land at the time of homeschooling their kids, and the truancy laws and that kind of thing. And so we've come a long way from that. Now, most everybody knows at least somebody who's homeschooling. And so we don't have that kind of persecution upon us anymore. And there's absolutely no reason why parents should not be educating their children at home. So let's bring that home. There's no need to send our kids to some other building to be instructed. The best kind of instruction can take place right here in our homes. And then thirdly is cooking. You know, it amazes me that there is so many restaurants, across the country. And everywhere you look, it seems, even with the economy bad as it is, there's another restaurant popping up here and there. And that's because we live in such a busy society that cooking at home is actually a foreign concept anymore. And there's few families that actually have three meals a day in their home. And, you know, it used to be, as people were especially raised in rural environments and on farms and things like that, that the meal time was, you know, almost a sacred time in the family, and people would gather around and have cooked meals at home. And now that's not so much anymore. Now people, as I mentioned in the introductory segment there, talking about how families, you know, shuttle their kids off to this activity and that activity and grab food on the way. And so rarely is food cooked in the homes. In fact, I came across the statistic while I was looking at this, that between 4 and 5 commercially prepared meals per week is what the average family eats. And so, you know, that doesn't leave a lot of dinners for cooking at home. And so, you know, another study showed that half of the food budget for the average family went to food prepared outside the home. So if you think about that for a moment, if you've got a grocery budget of $300 a week, that means $150 of that dollars a week is going towards the commercially prepared or food outside of the home. And so what kind of money can be saved if we lessen the amount of eating that is taking place outside the home and we begin to cook inside the home? You know, it's not hard to learn this. I know some of you probably are thinking, well, I never really learned how to cook growing up, and that was not something my mom taught me or whatever it is. And typically the women cook, although I know a lot of men who enjoy cooking and do just as good a job and spend just as much time doing it and that kind of thing. And so I'm not saying that that is supposed to be any particular activity, but traditionally, of course, it's been the main activity of the women in the home. But it's really simple to learn how to cook and to use various recipes. And especially with the internet now, there's no reason why we can't access good, wholesome recipes that are simple to do and to build from. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to Chef Keith Snow's website called harvesteating.com. And his goal is, of course, to be able to teach you how to put foods together so that you don't really need a recipe. You just kind of know what foods go together, and you're able to prepare things from scratch that you grow locally, or that you produce locally, or that you can acquire from local farmers in season. And so it's a great resource. I'll put a link into the show notes for that. But cooking is an area that seems to be a lost art and has been given over to other
businesses and other places that should be reserved for the home. And then number four is food production. You know, everyone should be growing something, is my theory. And, you know, even if it's just sprouting some of your own seeds, that might be a start. And, you know, you can at least eat those seeds, go to the store, get some bean seeds or whatever, and have some bean sprouts. And at least it gets you growing something. At least it gets you working with something. But there's no reason why anybody can't have a 4x4 area raised bed in the backyard or something like that, unless you live in an apartment complex that's, you know, you're on the fifth story or something. But even with that, you can have a balcony. In the balcony, you can have some container gardens or something like that. And so we need to get back to growing our own food. And of course, you know, we have a business of trying to grow food for other people. And so I'm saying that knowing that if everybody followed my principles, then, you know, we would be lacking in market. But I still believe it's the right thing to do. And that is that most people should be producing some amount of their own food. The reason for that, of course, is obvious. It's great nutrition. It's good exercise. It's helpful. It's more sustainable. It's better for you, better for the environment. You're able to produce the kind of food you want. It gives you a skill that can be advantageous in times of need. And so all those advantages are great. And did you know that if you take, if you want to do more than just the square foot garden, you want to actually start homesteading. And homesteading, is really kind of the direction that this podcast takes. But homesteading is the idea of being able to produce more from your land, being able to actually live more sustainably by the food that you produce and by the way in which you live. And so if you want to do that, here's some guidelines. Did you know that just 100 square foot per person is sufficient to grow all of the vegetables that you will need for each person? So if you've got a family of four, then 400 square feet is all that's needed. Four 100 square foot beds is all that is needed to be able to produce all the food, vegetables that you need. So that's not a lot of space. And, you know, everybody can work that amount of land if they have it and be able to produce that kind of production. And what a great asset that is. And then, you know, if you want to add some eggs to that, you can get a half a dozen laying hens and move them around in their backyard or put them into a chicken coop or something like that. And you'll have all the eggs that you need. If you have half a dozen eggs, you're going to get, you know, four eggs a day, which, you know, most families don't eat more than that. And then, you know, if you want to get another meat source, you can add rabbits to that, just $2 or two does and a buck. And you'll be able to have, you know, with five cages, so you can put the bunnies into another cage when it's time to wean them off. And you can grow out on average about 60 rabbits per year. So that's, you know, more than one rabbit a week. That's a great protein source. It's a great, nutritional supplement to the vegetables that you've been growing in your 100 square foot plots. And so there's a lot that you can do just on a little scale that can go, you know, can bring leaps and bounds to your nutrition. It can bring leaps and bounds to your food production. And, you know, we outsource so much of our food production that can easily be done in our homes. And so another thing that we need to bring home is our food production. Number five is hospitality. Our home should be a place of hospitality. You know, the word hosp in hospital and hostess and hospitality means rest or care. And really, that's what our home should be. It should be a place of rest. It should be a place of care. And, you know, this can be from just the idea of being a place of rest for the family, or you can extend it all the way out to the idea of being a place of hospitality for people passing through the area, businessmen or missionaries or whatever it might be. But what a great way to open your home and to make your home a place of hospitality for other Christians. Christian homes should be an alternative to the hospitality industry. The hospitality industry, of course, by that I mean hotels and motels and restaurants and things like that. And, you know, it's a tragic thing when Christian businessmen have to travel and stay in hotels. There's nothing good, especially if you're staying by yourself, that can come from staying in a hotel. And so I guess you can get a lot of work done or something, but there's too many temptations when you're alone like that. How much better is it to stay with another Christian family, to be encouraged, to meet another family, to learn about the area and that kind of thing? And so opening your home for hospitality is a great way to maximize the use of your home, to be able to develop an attitude of giving as well as teaching your children what it is to be hospitable and to entertain others. You know, in the biblical days, there was inns, but in most cases, both Jews and Christians stayed in homes as they went from place to place. In fact, it's hard to read very far in the Bible without seeing acts of hospitality among God's people. And so, you know, this is really what we're called to do as well. We're called to hospitality. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a book that I recommend called Hospitality Commands. And it's a great resource to show you how much more effective we can be as Christians when we extend and open our homes for hospitality purposes. So that's the fifth one. The sixth one is church. Some of the best experiences I've ever had in church was in a home church that I started. There's something about being able to gather with other believers and to worship God in a home that provides a kind of intimacy and a kind of fellowship that you can't find when you go to a typical church building or something like that. Families can exercise hospitality by opening their homes. Another way of exercising hospitality, as I mentioned earlier, by hosting a church. And then church funds can be freed up and not have to be used on the resources of a building, but instead can be channeled towards missionaries or the care for the poor or whatever it might be that are more useful means than providing for a building. And the fellowship is just so much more enjoyable and intimate when it's in a home than when it is in a stuffy building. Seems much more like a business when it's in a building, and much more like a home and a family when it's in a home. And that's really the kind of atmosphere that there should be in a church. And their churches have grown all over the world as a result of home churches and home movements. You think of the whole activities in China and the underground church there that grew from house to house as house meetings developed all over the nation and people met in homes. And this is how the early church started. People met in homes and they went from house to house breaking bread, it says, and enjoying one another's fellowship. And so there's absolutely no reason why we can't have church in the home. Now, I have to tell you a story that when I went to go get a license to marry, this is a few years back, a couple in the church, I was currently in the house church, and the state did not recognize it as a church because it was a house church, and there were some other issues also along with that. But a lot of times, and even in our society, the whole idea of a church is that it's got to be a building, a brick and mortar structure, and that's the church. But the church is the people, and the people can meet in homes just as well as they can in buildings. Now, I'm not saying that we should destroy all the church buildings that are out there, but I am saying that there is a kind of fellowship, a kind of intimacy that takes place in a home when there is fellowship around a table and when there's fellowship in someone's home that does not take place when it's outside the home. So let's bring church home. And then number seven is outreach. Now, most of the time when we think of outreach, we think of some program at the church building or some other program, a visitation or something like that, where the activity is done away from the home. Well, why not invite your neighbors over for a cookout or something like that and extend an invitation to lost people to dine with you or to come over and play volleyball or, you know, whatever it might be, some kind of activity that you have at your home and open your home up to them as a form of hospitality, but also as a form of evangelism. While you're with them, of course, you can share the gospel, find out what their needs are, show them how the Lord is faithful to you and meeting those needs and that kind of thing, testify of the goodness. This is exactly what Matthew did. Matthew opened his home. Matthew, the tax collector, of course, in the scripture, he opened his home, invited all of his lost friends so that they might be introduced to Jesus. And what a great means of outreach that is. You know, we don't have to have some kind of special outreach program at the church. All we need to do is open our homes to lost people and spend time talking with them about things that matter and about the Lord. So let's bring outreach home. And then number eight is exercise. You know, the typical family I mentioned earlier, they will, spend some time, a lot of time and a lot of money going to YMCAs or American Family Fitness or whatever the gym is that they go to exercising. And when much of the exercises that are done can be done just as easily, if not better, at home. You know, it doesn't take a lot to exercise. In fact, if you stay home, you're able to maybe work more in the garden, take longer walks or something like that. And as a result of that, those things are exercise. But, you know, I've come to realize I've been exercising all my life for the most part. I used to be very, very competitive in athletics. And now I just try to keep myself in decent physical shape. And, you know, there's not a lot that it takes to be able to keep yourself physically fit. Really, all you need to do is push-ups, which you don't need to go somewhere for that. Pull-ups, which you don't really need to go somewhere for that. You can go out to your back and, you know, use the swing set bar or the trellis or the rafters in the barn or whatever it might be. You can use most any kind of structure to do pull-ups. And so push-ups, of course, that works the pushing muscles, and pull-ups works the pulling muscles. And then you can do sit-ups to work the core area, and walking and running. And you can do all of that things from all of those things from your home without ever having to join a gym, without ever having to, you know, exercise yourself in some kind of formal setting. I know some people like that, and they need the encouragement from others, and, you know, they need, maybe need the accountability or something like that. But, you know, you can find ways around that and to do it in the home. And so exercising in the home is something that also is an advantage and something that we need to bring back. And then number 9 is care for the aged. You know, being a pastor, I have had all kinds of opportunity to go to nursing homes and to see the aged in those nursing homes. And what is most tragic is when you go there regularly and you realize that some of the people in there have not had a visitor in months. And what a tragic thing it is that the aged in our community, the aged in our society, those who have lived their life and have wisdom and instruction that they can impart to younger generations are, for sake of a better word, locked up in an institution where they're not allowed to express themselves in that way. And how much better would it be for families to bring home the aged, to have them live in their home or to go into their home and live, whatever it might be, but to have the family in multiple generations together, learning from one another. How much can your children learn from having their grandparents or their grandmother or their granddad living with them and telling them about what it was like when they were growing up and learning from them some of the skills and the principles of life that they have learned over their years? That's what I talk about when I talk about multi-generational legacy. And yet in our culture, what we have is we have people being dumped off and dropped off and nursing homes and old age homes and assisted living facilities and things like that. And now, I understand that there is sometimes a place where maybe Alzheimer's has hit somebody severely and you cannot leave the home without that person, and so there needs to be some kind of assistance there. But there's no reason why you can't have that in the home and bring the assistance to your home. Why is it that we have to take our loved ones that are aged to institutions to get that kind of care? Why can't they be cared for in their home? This is what it talks about in 1 Timothy chapter 3, where it says that if a man does not care for his own house, he is worse than an infidel. It's not talking necessarily just about the nucleus home with a wife and children. It's talking about the extended family, widows, that you know, can be cared for by the family. And so we need to bring home this idea of caring for the aged. There's a waiting list in most nursing homes. And in order to get into most nursing homes, you either have to be, you have to spend extensive amount of money. There's about a $60,000 a year charge in Richmond or in the Richmond area of Virginia for nursing home care. And it's probably comparable in most other places in the United States. And what a waste of resources to spend that on institutional care when your parent, your grandparent can get the kind of care that they need through the home and through, if need be, hiring a professional to come in regularly to change wounds or whatever it might be that is necessary. and to provide the kind of environment in the home that can be more beneficial to everyone involved. You get better care, and you get better relationships, and you get a sounder home when there's that multiple generations together. And so we need to bring the care of the aged home. So let me summarize then some of the things that we need to bring home. We need to bring home our work, that is the business, the means of employment, the means of producing income, that kind of thing. We need to bring that home. We need to bring home education. We need to bring home cooking. We need to bring home food production. We need to bring home hospitality. We need to bring home the church. We need to bring home outreach. We need to bring home exercise. And we need to bring home care for the aged. Hopefully that's been helpful to you. Maybe you can identify an area where you have relinquished that responsibility, given it over to some professional or some institution of some kind, and you realize that it's something you need to bring home now. Well, take the steps today to do that. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of the homeless. What will you do today to build your legacy?